Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you very much, Ollie. It's great to be here. What I'd like to do is start off around our thinking around natural capital stocks, our soils, our water and our climate, because from those natural capital stocks come very valuable ecosystem services. The supporting services, soil formation, nutrient cycling, through the provisioning services, we know a lot about the things that we can buy and sell. And I want to talk more about the regulating services, in particular water regulation, and I might even touch on cultural services. Because from those ecosystem services that flow from our natural capital stocks come at the constituents of our well-being, as the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment in 2005 detailed. Prompted by concerns about resource use, supermarket chains are starting to ask their suppliers questions. Walmart, for example, developed a sustainable product index, and they asked their 100,000 suppliers 15 questions on sustainability. Two of the 15 questions are on water, number 7. Please report your total water use from facilities that produce your product. Secondly, have you set publicly available water use reduction targets? So water footprinting is becoming a criterion for access to the shelves of the world's top supermarkets. And when we think about water footprints, we think of three colours. The green water of our rain, which is stored in the soil and either transpired or drained. And when that water runs out, we go to our blue water resources and take water out for irrigation, or in the case of horticulture, frostbiting. And then, of course, there's the green water, the stuff that drains out the bottom that has changed in quality and can have impact on receiving water bodies. So in my talk, I want to talk about grey water regulation services under grapes, green water regulation services with avocados, and blue water regulation services with date palms. So when we look at what the FAO and the Water Footprint Network says about water in our products, it seems there's a hell of a lot of water in the food we eat and the clothes we wear. Indeed, they reckon there's 120 litres to make a glass of wine. Well, I want to have a look at that because there's some very bad soil physics in there. Here is what the Water Footprint Network do in terms of how they calculate the water footprint. They add up the water colours of direct water use and indirect water use from the background system. And it's quite amazing to a soil physicist that return flow or non-consumptive water use is outside the box. So we did an analysis of the water footprint of New Zealand wine in one of our better known wine areas, and we followed through their system of looking at the foreground system and the background system and all the water costs that come in through something like electricity and all the water actions in the winery. And it's not just about ET, because we as soil physicists know there's a hell of a lot more to it. There's rainfall, there's drainage. It's the drainage that connects our vineyards to our receiving water bodies. And so water use that goes as vapour is just one regulating service. The drainage is another vital regulating service. So when we take a hydrological approach to calculate a footprint, we add in irrigation and drainage and runoff. And some of that drainage might be green water, stuff that drains through rain that drains through the soil. It might also be blue water, irrigation that has been applied and drains through the soil. But it does perform a valuable regulating service of recharging the groundwater resource underneath. So when we look at that in the Marlborough region and we plot our footprints, they come out negative. Surprise, surprise. In areas of high rainfall, there is recharge through those vineyards that is greater than the transpiration going out of the top. And so when we add it up across the whole region, we find out that, in fact, there's 85 litres of water per kilogram of grapes that has gone to recharge groundwater. And it's quite variable across even a single region terroir. So when we add it up and put in the background and the foreground system, we find that for every bottle of Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, there's about 67 litres of water that has gone to recharge the groundwaters underneath. So it's not 120 litres of wine per glass. It's actually an aquifer recharge. And so that is a valuable ecosystem service provided by vineyards, the recharge of the underlying aquifers. So when someone tells you it takes 120 litres of wine, that's only one side of the hydrological equation. But that water regulating service is important, because if we look at the Marlborough region of New Zealand, it's actually wall-to-wall vineyards. The purple area are the vineyards. So it's a dominant land use. This large river down here recharges the aquifer under the vineyards, which is used for the irrigation. So what might be the grey water impact of nitrogen leaching on the local water resources? Because halfway down the valley here, there's an aquiclude, and the groundwater that's flowed under the vineyards comes to the surface. So we put our flux meters in under the vineyard, down below the bottom of the root zone, and looked at the nitrate leaching through the vineyard. And so here we were measuring in the vineyard, and here there was a groundwater bore just before it hits the aquiclude and becomes surface water. So when we look at that, we find that here is the nitrate leaching coming at the bottom of the root zone, and 2.4 metres downstream, we see that this is the water quality in the groundwater. It's a massive aquifer. It's travelling at about 30 to 100 metres a day. So there's a huge conveyor belt of water travelling under those vineyards. And so a simple analysis, trying to connect soil physics to hydrology, which I see is mooted as the name for this division coming up, is, in the simple case, to take a simple model of lag and assimilation attenuation. And when we do that, we can superimpose our results and see that from our vineyard, it takes about 185 days, if we look at the pattern for the water, the pattern in the groundwater to match that from the leaching. And the groundwater concentration is only 10% of that which entered it, such as the massive flow into that groundwater. And furthermore, the valuable regulating service is such that it actually meets our surface water guidelines in terms of nitrate leaching. You see these are very small numbers, about half a milligram of nitrate N per litre. Also, I'd like to mention that there are some other valuable cultural services that come from our vineyard stocks. There are aesthetic appeal, there's music festivals, so it's recreational, and also fosters good social relationships. But enough of that. Let's go to the Kenyan Highlands, where we're working on an aid project with some 1,500 smallholder farmers, about half of whom are women. And they have some old avocado trees that were planted 50 years ago. These are poorly managed trees, and the fruit were previously unharvested. But this company, Olivado, has begun pressing the avocados for oil to sell as a premium product in supermarkets. And so now there is a revenue stream for those avocado trees. But there's a real challenge to improve the fruitfulness and to develop drought avoidance, because we have to manage the soil's water regulating services without irrigation, because these are very poor farmers. So the problem is that in the short rainy season here, you have the flowering of the avocados, and that goes through the dry season before the long rainy season begins when they're harvesting. So the fruit filling and the drought coincide. So the challenge is to manage the regulating services in the soil to maintain fruitfulness of the trees and avoid drought. And you'll notice that with the simple GDOT sensor that we put in right at the beginning of our project, you can see there's quite different soil physics going on at the upper site compared to the lower site. So with some simple measurements using a mini permeameter, we went in and looked at the different hydraulic conductivity functions at those two sites, and we'll use this data later on to model the soil's water regulating services. But let's come back to the big driver of soil hydrology, and that's the plant. And these plants are big and old, and they consume a hell of a lot of water. And so we decided that we would invest in the ecological infrastructure by trimming them and pruning them substantially. And that will have multiple advantages in terms of the ecosystem services that those pruned trees will provide. You can see we've just been back a couple of weeks later. The sun's come down into the canopy. There are shoots growing, so we're improving the fruitfulness down into the canopy. The harvest quality will be improved because they won't have to throw the avocados down from the top of a 20-metre tree. And that will be safer harvesting for the people who climb the trees to harvest it. But my interest here is how will we go about reducing the water use of those trees so that they might avoid the drought between the rainy seasons. So we installed our heat pulse gear into one of the big trees prior to pruning, and you can see it's using between 300 to 400 litres per day relative to its smaller unpruned neighbour. And when we pruned it, we could virtually halve the water use by cross-reference to that unpruned tree from about 350 litres a day down to about 250 litres a day. So when we compare the trees, through that pruning, we've actually reduced the tree water use by some 40%. We had a meteorological station about 80 kilometres away, and we're getting good data on ET Nought there, except someone stole our battery, so we have 2 months without data. And so we could cross-reference the tree's water use, our pruned tree's water use, to ET Nought. Now, it's 80 kilometres away, and I know, and we've improved that, and we've got a station closer now. But you can see that prior to pruning, the tree's transpiration was about 105 times ET Nought. Notice the mismatch of units there, from litres per day to millimetres per day. And that's where we'll have to work out around the crop factor. But if we carry that through in a simple calculation, the crop factor, we reckon, has dropped due to pruning from about 0.83 to 0.44. So the water use has dropped by about half. So that was about 2 weeks ago. And now we're waiting, as the short rainy season's in swing, to see what might happen when it ends very soon and January, February, March becomes dry. And we'll have a look and see, has that pruning enabled the tree, through reducing its water use, to avoid that summer drought just as the tree is filling? So if so, valuable regulating, provisioning and cultural services will have been achieved through managing our natural capital stocks. I want to finish off in a slightly different place. We're doing a project in the United Arab Emirates with Environment Abu Dhabi and the International Centre for Biosaline Agriculture, where there are dwindling groundwater reserves. There's about 50 years of groundwater left. And so need to understand the regulating services of the soils and the plants to minimise blue water use whilst maximising the provisioning service for dates. We're used to measuring sap flow using the compensation heat pulse method in dicotyledons, where the sap flow velocity is greater in the outer xylem rings. But here we're working in a monocot, and so if we want to use the compensation heat pulse method, we had to build longer probes to get right into the centre where the sap velocity is greater. So we built new probes so we could get deeper into the tree so we could integrate that up to get our sap flow in litres per hour. And so this is what it looks like, just matching the tree water use on the left-hand side in terms of litres per hour. You can see that's between about 10 litres an hour or about 120 litres a day compared to the ET Nought, which is on the other side. So when we cross-reference those, we can see that the tree essentially has a crop factor of about 0.38. And this, of course, will vary with tree size and spacing, and the challenge there is to take measurements of leaf area through canopy measurements and through light sensing underneath the canopy to work out how that relationship will change. And so here's our measurements up till about 2 weeks ago compared to the predictions using a crop factor of 0.38. You can see they're using about 50 litres a day in winter and about 140 litres a day in summer. But how does that tree regulating service compare with the soil supply services? So we're working in the desert sands of Abu Dhabi, and they're quite interesting because you can bang single TDR rods right down to 2 metres in one hit. Well, multiple hits, I should add. But of course, they're saline soil, so we sleeve the centre rod. And we can see here is the tradition, the irrigation system that has hitherto been used by Adikbar. You can see in the basin, we can see the irrigation, this is every 4 minutes, and you can see when the irrigation switched off, a rapid drainage out as the irrigation goes on twice a day. So you can see that the bubbler's on for 15 minutes and then there's very rapid drainage over the next 12 minutes. So there's TDR evidence of substantial drainage when you irrigate in this berm system with water coming out of a bubbler. So when we add it all up, over that period, you can see that the cumulative palm water use is here at about 15,000 litres of water. They've put on 40,000 litres of water, so that's three times too much. And when we add up how much is drained, there's some 20,000 litres, 22,000 litres of valuable groundwater has just leached past the root zone. So there is a goal there is to develop better irrigation practice and minimising that blue water use, and getting rid of the bubblers is going to be one of the first things. But the soil water regulation in these desert sands is truly on a knife edge. And so the pump was accidentally left off on tree number three. And when they emailed through the sap flow data on Sunday night, we said, what's gone wrong with tree three? Something seems to have happened quite quickly. And over 6 days, you can see the transpiration relative to ET0. We're just saying that's what it is. It's obviously not a crop factor of 0.38, but maybe a little bit less. You can see that the tree's water use dropped off dramatically, and we could see that in the TDR as the soil rapidly drained out as the date palm took it. But what's quite interesting from regulating services, when the water got switched back on, the soil water content came up very rapidly. But in fact, the tree water use did not. It took another 14 days before the tree was restored to its full hydraulic functioning. So I'd like to conclude about the value of the ecosystem services that come from our natural capital stocks, and it's important that we sustain those returns from our natural capital stocks, our green waters, our grey waters, and our blue waters. Thank you. Hello, Danny.
You're probably aware of the paper by Chris Perry in the Agricultural Water Management about the locality of the water footprint.
Absolutely. We've had lots of arguments with Chris.
Sorry?
Well, I've had lots of arguments with Chris. I'm on his side, by the way.
So how does this amount to solving any global problem if the water footprint, well, just for the audience, the water footprint is a local phenomenon, where the carbon footprint goes in the atmosphere, so every molecule goes to the atmosphere and changes something, whereas the water, you know, if I give up my drinking of wine, then that water would basically flow through the river to the ocean, right?
Absolutely, and that's a critical point. The point about carbon is taken. A molecule of carbon going to the atmosphere affects us all. But the locality, and that's what we set out to say, and we showed across that even within a single terroir of Marlborough, there is a huge range for individual vineyards in terms of what that water footprint is. But it still misses the point, and I'll add something, and it's not related to this, about carbon footprints too, is that in the water footprint, they're missing the fact that there's a hydrological cycle with groundwater recharge. Likewise, in the carbon footprint, have you ever seen in a carbon footprint someone take into account the sequestration of carbon in the soil? No. So the whole thing around footprinting has got a very much an atmospheric flux process, rather than what we as natural scientists might look at in terms of a balance sense. Tim.
Brent, I was a little surprised that your vineyard was essentially over-irrigating so much. Why that sort of water?
No, sorry, that wasn't over-irrigation. That was just because we that is a Mediterranean region and it rains in winter.
Okay.
The recharge, no, it's a very tight region for water. It's winter rain, when there's no vegetation on the deciduous crop and it rains, so it's just drainage. Yeah, good point. Sorry, I didn't make that.
I have to say something about wine, but shouldn't you take the footprint of wine vineyard, not in absolute terms, but actually comparing to the native?
Yeah, that's a question I get asked a lot, and I say no, in the sense that we want something to tell us about the contemporary hydrology. Now, I've said there's 67 litres of water per bottle of wine go down. What we need to address is that, does that perform the ecosystem services we want of that drainage? Is it enough? And so it's no good saying, well, back prior to the human settlement of New Zealand, it was massive trees and vegetation before we chopped them all down. And so that doesn't help us explain the contemporary hydrology. We're never going to go back to native vegetation. So I think we have to understand, is the number telling us something about the contemporary hydrology in that region? And that's the challenge. I don't know whether 67 is a good number or not. And that's what we have to have that discussion with.
Any other questions?
Brett, in your Kenyan project of trimming the trees and opening them up, there would be a component of soil evaporation. I'm sure as veteran you would consider that.
Yeah, no, there will be, Dani, but what happens in the dry season, the rainy season ends in around December, there'll be soil evaporation, and let's say it's the 1st of December. My gut feeling would be by the 10th of December, soil evaporation's zero for the rest of the summer season, and so there's not much happening there. There's no intermittent rain or anything like that. So I'd just say that soil evaporation goes to zero after 5-10 days. I think the bigger challenge probably will be the how, and that's what we haven't done, that is, if it stops raining on the 1st of December, how much water continues to drain out of the profile. No. The sensors are low down at about a meter 50 off the ground. We were pruning selective limbs to open up the middle of the canopy. We did manage to drop one of those boughs onto them and bust a set of sensors, but that's okay. We can replace those. But they stayed in place while we pruned the tree. Okay, we're in at about a metre 50 where there's a single large trunk, and we have four sensors in and probes are going deep into the tree. We're pruning way up, and we're pruning well past any where branches form and there might be some deformation of the xylem, the continuity of the xylem vessel. So we're a long way away from any deformation of the xylem vessels that caused by branching.